All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and what you can do to stop them. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And tonight I've got D.L. Cummings. He is the chair of the Duval County Libertarian Affiliate in Jacksonville, Florida. And after working hard for corporate America, he spends his remaining time chasing his two-year-old around the house, cooking, woodworking, attending Toastmasters, and doing his podcast, Liberty Dad. We're going to have some really interesting conversations today about the libertarian echo chamber and what we can do to break out of it. But before we get started, Bitcoin is at $40,633 per Bitcoin, in case you wanted to know. If you're watching this live on Facebook or YouTube, please make sure to share and comment and ask your questions and object to things that we're saying that are wrong, because we're wrong about everything. Send us your complaints, throw rotten eggs at us, egg us on. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the Nug of Knowledge. The Nug of Knowledge is an amazing new CBD product. It's really awesome. It's indoor grown. If you like smoking cannabis or CBD, this is a really awesome product. I don't want to say it gets you high, but it's nice stuff. Of course, it doesn't have too much THC, but it has a bunch of other terpenes and other cool stuff in there that's good for you. And of course, head over to taxationstuff.info. Help us out by purchasing some of our awesome swag. And make sure to go to YouTube and subscribe. We're almost at 3,000 on YouTube, which I know is hard to believe. Why is that so low? Well, YouTube's algorithms suck. We're doing so much better on Facebook. We're trying to get these numbers up on YouTube. So head over there now and make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/taxationistheft. And now on to the show. DL, welcome. How's it going?
How are you? Thank you for having me on.
I'm doing awesome. So before I forget, because we just had a conversation about how I forget every time, which tax do you hate the most?
Property tax. And the reason, I assume that you want to know, my wife and I are involved in real estate. She's a real estate investor and an agent. So that kind of heavily revolves around many of the things that we do. So we have a little bit of familiarity with the property tax. And if you do things like, depending on what city that you're in, you may find that your taxes are impacted by some of the things you do. So for instance, a while back, we were running Airbnb out of our home. We had a couple spare rooms and we were running Airbnb, and we actually had an impact on the homestead in order to be able to maintain. Yeah, we actually got shut down by the city, interestingly enough. We got a little thing on the door and I ended up calling the person that left it. And, you know, I was trying not to argue with her too much, because I understand that usually the first person that you meet is generally not the person that has the answers or really a whole lot of authority to do much of anything. They're just kind of following the rules.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, she was saying, well, you can't run a business out of your home. And I said, well, you can. And I said, because there are stipulations under how you can do so. You know, and some of those for our city, some of the stipulations were things like you can't have big, huge signs. You can't have like a parking lot. Basically, they didn't want you to make it look like a commercial business on the outside. They wanted it to remain looking residential. And I was like, we're doing that. And but it didn't really get me anywhere. And after a lot of fighting and a lot of very interesting and conflicting answers from the city, we were able to get back going. Yeah, that was, it's what you laugh, but I wasn't laughing at the time. My wife had went down to the city and she said, okay, look, we're doing Airbnb. You're telling us that we can't. Under what circumstances, you know, what do we got to do to keep this going so that we don't have any more issues with you? and she went to like the different functions of the city. So she went to like zoning, and she went to, you know, some of these other, drawing a blank on the word that I want at the moment, but she went to these other, parts of the city to talk to them, and everybody gave her a different answer. One of the answers was, you can only do it for, you know, if it's less than this many days. Another person said, if it's more than this many days, or at least this many days. And the answer that really got me going was, well, city council hasn't decided what they want to do, so go ahead and consider it illegal until they figure it out. And wow. I was like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
So I was pretty furious. And I was like, I'm glad that I did. My wife is much more diplomatic in these situations than I am.
That's insane. I mean, that's the kind of answer that's like, you know, being an entrepreneur, I always came across this, like, you know, whenever I throw out a business idea, somebody's like, well, is that legal? Right. And that should never be the question. The question should always be, I mean, unless it's like obviously wrong, but if it's right. wrong, then it shouldn't matter if it's legal. But that should never be the question. When you come up with an idea, you shouldn't have to like, oh, well, let me hire a lawyer and see if this is legal. You should assume it's legal unless, you know, there's some, I mean, they shouldn't be making things illegal that aren't inherently wrong, that we shouldn't. It's just so frustrating.
Well, the question itself is a bit of an interesting thing, because most of the people that say that are regular, everyday, average people. And so think about the implication of what that really means. That means that the laws are so complicated that people actually question simple ideas. Because I've right. heard a lot of people talk about their entrepreneurial ideas. I've not heard anything that really jumps out as something that they should not do. You know, nobody's like, I think I'm going to make this job of killing people, or, you know, assaulting people for, you know, that haven't aggressed against
me. Or darken the earth, you know, to prevent global warming.
Right, right. Like people are like, you know what, I think I might open up a barbershop. And then people are like, well, is that legal? Like, think about right. the nature of that question. It's just terrible that we actually have, that people actually even think that it's a useful question to even ask. Like, we should be able to say, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I hope you're successful. And, you know, we shouldn't be thinking about it as illegal, because it just should just be like a normal everyday thing. Like, you want to do this, somebody else wants to pay you money, hope you meet.
Right. Exactly. You bring up property tax, and that's come to be, even though it's come to be one of the ones I hate the most, even though relatively speaking, it's not as much as, say, income tax, right? Like, income tax, we know we're paying, I don't know, 40% of our income, more or less, on income tax. When it comes to property tax, a lot of people are paying maybe 10% of their income on property tax, more or less. And it doesn't seem as much. Now that I actually say 10%, that actually sounds like a lot. But it's not, and it doesn't come out of our paycheck. Yeah, it's frustrating. You got to pay it once a year, but you don't get that reminder every 2 weeks.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that one is the one that forces us to go get a job that ultimately has a government source of funding, because that's, I mean, the government extracts, I figured this out, they tax us so much, they take the entire amount of money out of the economy twice a year. And so the only way it gets back into the economy is wherever the government spends it. So if you're working for dollars, you're working for somebody who at least is working for somebody who's working for somebody who's working for the government in order to right. get these dollars to pay this freaking property tax. And there's no end to it. So even though it's a smaller amount, it's like, you can say, oh yeah, well, I'm not going to have a job and I won't have to pay the income tax, but you're still going to be paying that property tax.
Right. And the other thing is, it's I don't want to say it's a bigger penalty per se, but it definitely feels like a bigger penalty if you don't pay your property tax, because you could lose your home.
Right. Well, and I would argue it is in fact a bigger penalty.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that you can, I mean, I'm not terribly versed in tax law, so I don't think that you can necessarily lose your job. I mean, certainly the government's going to come after you for the money that they believe that you owe them. But if for whatever reason you've not been paying your income tax, it's not like you're going to all of a sudden just be like, okay, well, I can't get a job now, you know, but you start losing your home. That has a lot of implications.
Right. You're not going to be able to get into a new home. You're going to have bank issues. Oh, well, looks here right. like you were evicted. Renting is probably even going to be difficult at that point.
Oh, yeah. People look, I mean, you know, especially now, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about renting and property tax and whatnot. You know, recently they had the, what was that crazy thing? It didn't last very long, but it was rent. It was something that was trending on Twitter a few months ago where people wanted to rent strike. That's what it was. People wanted to go on this rent strike. They didn't want to pay rent. And I'm like, you know, that catches up as somebody who has property or two or so. And landlords aren't stupid. They, you know, they didn't get a property or more, however many they have, by being foolish. Because I've been in some of the real estate groups. I've been in some of the meetings. I know what they teach. And they teach you how to be savvy and to make money. And they also teach you how to be a landlord. Like, okay, this is the kind of thing that you want to look for so that you get a good tenant. Well, every time we start doing these things like rent strike and all these things where it negatively impacts the landlord, landlords find some other way around it. So all you're doing is ultimately, I guess you could call it taxing yourself with all this, because you're eventually going to make it more difficult, you know, for landlords. And so the same thing happens. You know, I get evicted from my home. Landlords look for these kind of things. And then they're like, well, I don't know. Is this person going to pay? You know, so all these things contribute to some future challenges that somebody may face.
Right. And I think this is actually a really interesting topic, because we came here saying we were going to talk about the libertarian echo chamber. And I think this is one of those issues that I like to kind of I like to reach out to the people on the left, because those are the people talking about rent strikes and, you know, cancel rent. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about. But like it's interesting, because I agree. Right. This is the libertarian answer is typically you agreed to that. You made a contract, pay your contract, mm-hmm. right? Pay your debts. At the same time, like I want to kind of look at the bigger picture and understand that these people are not necessarily, they're not in this position because they're bums. They're in this position right. because the government took their jobs away. And so what's really messed up about this whole thing is you've got a person right here, and this person is almost like a conduit for money, right? Money goes mm-hmm. in one side and out the other side. And which is unfortunate, because everybody should be, excuse me for getting into electrical terms, everybody should be a little bit more like a capacitor and save a little bit right. of it. But regardless, money comes in, money goes out, and a lot of that goes to rent. And what the government has done is the government has said, okay, we're going to cut off the money going in to this person's life, but that person is still going to have to pay all the money that goes out. And a lot of that goes to the landlord.
Right.
And the landlord is another business, but he doesn't have to shut down his business, right? And you know, forget about, even if he's generous enough to say, hey, I'm going to stop collecting rent, he still has to pay his mortgages. He still has to pay his right. property taxes. And correct. Government's not saying we're not going to collect property tax. And government's not telling the banks, hey, shut down the banks, stop collecting and stop charging interest on right. your mortgages until people can get back to work. They totally just shut this down on one side. So I can really empathize with these people to see that this really shouldn't be a fight between tenants and landlords.
Correct.
This is a fight between all of us and government is trying to turn us against each other, tenants and landlords.
And they're unfortunately doing a very good job. I've perused through like the local Jacksonville subreddit sometimes, and I'll see people complaining in certain areas, and they'll complain about, you know, all these flippers and these landlords, and there's this mentality that it's us and them. And I think it's a very poor mentality, and it's very difficult, because in a way, landlords do hold some cards. You know, they have the property. Generally, the the contract is written more favorably to them. You know, they may say, okay, well, we're not going to allow you to have a dog, or we're not going to allow you to have a trampoline and some of these other things that you might find in a very typical American home. And so in some ways they do hold some of the cards. And so there's already this, I guess you can call it a small animosity, like, okay, I'm paying all this money, but I don't get all the same benefits of living in a home that I might normally live in. And then you have government come in and they stoke those flames and they make it even worse. And, you know, so if they say, okay, well, we're going to, you know, and what they did was they, I think it was the CDC who imposed a moratorium on rent. And I'm not sure if that's, that moratorium is still in effect. I can't remember the end date, but they imposed this moratorium. But when I read through it, it basically said, like, you don't have to pay rent. If you go online, you fill out this form, and then I think you had to send it to the government, but there's a particular form that you had to fill out. And then once you filled it out, you could hand it to your landlord and they couldn't evict you for non-payment. Now they could evict you for any other thing. And I try to tell people, I'm like, look, it's like the police. You know, if anybody's ever talked to an officer, or I don't know, this was my experience. Let's put it this way. I talked to an officer a long, long time ago, and I remember he said, unless you drive your car fresh off the lot, probably I can find something, you know, some reason to pull you over. And that same ability exists in the landlord-tenant relationship. Landlords can, they can find reasons to get rid of you. It's not that difficult. But the thing that people don't realize is they actually don't want to, because it's a lot of hardship on a landlord to evict somebody, because then they have to go through the process of cleaning it up and getting it prepared for a new person. Then they have to market it. Then they have to go through and, you know, take all the applications and run them and evaluate and then identify. So it takes some time. And so all that time, it's not generating money. And it may cost them money if they have to do a lot of repairs, or if they have, you know, like maybe the walls are scuffed up and they've, you know, so, you know.
Or even if it just takes them a long time to fill the vacancy.
Right. And so what people don't realize is I think it should be more symbiotic than it is. And there are going to be some areas where they butt heads. It's just natural. I think it's always natural because you have two competing parties who want different things. And, you know, the renter is going to want it as cheap as they can get it. And they're going to want all the goods and services that they can get out of it. And the landlord's going to want it for the most amount of money that they can get without all the goods and services or all the things that may end up costing them at some point in time, you know, such as having a pet. So, and you know, so those are natural and they're going to be there. But you start adding these other things in, and when they're one-sided, it really kind of fans the flames, because then that other side has to try to compensate. And the way they compensate is generally not pleasant. But they have, you know, but it works either way. Like if the landlords were favored somehow, then you would find that tenants would go out there and be trying to do things to compensate. Now, whether or not they have the same ability to compensate, you know, I mean, that varies on the person and maybe even the financial availability that they have to them. But I guess what I'm getting at here is that, yes, the government does fan these flames and they make these relationships much, much worse simply by picking and choosing winners and losers.
Right. I think, you know, something else that's really important that this is something that I've only recently started talking about, I mean, within the last year, is that there really are a lot of government programs that have created this system where everybody's renting and nobody's owning. Because ultimately, and I've been living down here in Mexico for like, I don't know, close to 3 years now. And I see, like, I'm making a lot of comparisons down here because, you know, and Mexico's not perfect, not by a long shot. But
sure,
there are a lot of things we can learn from Mexico. Like, the home ownership rate in Mexico is like much, much, much higher than what it is in the United States. And
right.
even what we have in the United States isn't real, because most of those people, they don't own their homes. It's in their name, but there's so much debt on it that if they just stopped
right.
today, if they couldn't make those payments, they lost their job, if they got sick, you know, anything happens, death in the family, that's it. That's it. It's gone. The bank's just going to come in and take it. Whereas in Mexico, they don't have these loan programs. And these loan programs are like, oh, they sound great. Oh, FHA, only 3% down. Oh, that's amazing. That's like hardly anything. These houses are too expensive. I can't afford that. But the reality is those houses are expensive because of the FHA, because they're giving away so much money.
Right.
The same thing we saw in 2008. And so you have this system where everybody in the United States is renting because the government has given us these too good to be true programs that have put us into a system of debt and rent. And
right.
and I think that's something that we definitely need to take a step back from and look at. And I get this too from, like, because, you know, my proposition is, hey, we should turn everybody into owners. Are there not enough houses? Well, let's start converting all these like giant project rental apartments where they've got like, you know, 1500 units in an apartment complex, start converting those into condos and, you know, turn people into owners. And
right.
I get it, like, okay, well, you know, the landlords are gonna be like, but wait a minute, that's my investment. Yeah, but that investment is also built on top of a lie. Not that you did anything wrong by getting into that investment, but that investment mm-hmm. is built on rent seeking. It's built on the opportunity, or not the opportunity, it's built on a system that has forced everybody else out of their homes, out of ownership, so that they have to be customers of your rent system. And yes, you're helping them out by creating a place for them to rent, but at the same time, this is it's not a sustainable way of living. We need to get people out of that. So but at the same time, I own a few properties and I'm renting a couple of them, and mm-hmm. like I understand, like, okay, so what, those things are just going to be worthless now and I got to get rid of them and take a loss on all that. That's definitely
right.
not something we want to do either. And millions of other people with millions of other properties. So we have to figure out a great way to transition people, I think, into owners. And the rent market, it's still going to exist. It's not going to be as big mm-hmm. as it is. But we've already seen, I mean, you know, I know there are people buying homes all the time.
Right.
Just for the purpose of renting on Airbnb. And mm-hmm. now the Airbnb market is flooded. And so now they can't rent and they're not
right.
making as much as they were expecting to. And it's
right.
like, it's like you're kind of proving the point that like these markets are not really there for that. There's always going to be rentals, right? Somebody's going to move to a city and say, hey, I'm only going to be here for 6 months. I don't want to buy a house. I'll
right.
rent. That's always going to be there. There's always going to be short-term stuff like hotels.
Right.
But I think for the majority of Americans, we need to get them into a position of equity in their homes. We should. I mean, it really just comes down to that problem of everybody floating, you know, 20 or 30 years worth of debt.
Right.
Not knowing what's going to happen next year.
Yeah. And I think another thing that, and this is something that libertarians would largely agree with, I believe, is another problem is regulation. Because all the money, when we go, like, let's say we get a property and we're going to renovate it and we want to rent it out, right? Well, there are certain requirements that have to be met. And if we don't meet those requirements, then, you know, it doesn't pass inspection and so on and so forth, you know? And so then we aren't able to go ahead and rent. And it may seem kind of silly because people are so used to certain things, you know? But I think that what happens is we don't get this market where people can really make a choice and based on what they want to spend. And so right now, I think that rent in general tends to be higher than it has to be, because when we go and we renovate something, there are certain requirements that we have to meet. So, and you know, right now I wasn't quite prepared to speak on this particular topic, so a lot of things are kind of escaping me at the moment. But one thing that kind of stands out is there is a certain distance on your walls that you have to have electrical outlets. It has to be there. Well, if I buy the house and it was old and You know, somebody owned it for 20, 30 years. And so it was, it fell under the old requirements, and maybe it met them and it's basically been grandfathered in and nobody had to come and inspect it. Well, now that I'm renovating it, before I can sell it, before I can rent it, before an inspector is going to pass it, I'm going to have to go through the entire house and make sure that there are electrical outlets at certain distances on every single wall. You know, but these little things, they all add up. And once they add right. up, then I need to recoup those costs. And where do those costs go? They go into the cost of the home, or they go into the rental cost, you know, whichever it may be. And so this makes it more difficult for people of lower income to either buy or rent in some areas, because now their market that's available to them based on their financial means is much, much smaller, you know. And the same goes with buying a home, because if they go to the bank and, you know, let's just for an example say that the majority of the homes in the area that they or in the city that they want to live, let's just say it's an average of like, you know, $150,000. You know, maybe they're only approved to get, you know, $100,000 loan. Well, then that cuts out a whole, you know, large number of homes where those homes may have actually been cheaper, you know. And so I think there's a lot of components that go into this conversation. And, you know, but I think the biggest one is that you have this government that keeps intervening. In every which way they intervene, there are two parties, and one party does not get the full benefit that the other party's getting. And it's usually the people that are buying the homes or building them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've got plenty of stories. One in particular that, you know, just your story reminded me of with the electrical outlets is I've got a property in San Antonio, and I'm renting it right now. It's got a water heater that went out, and in order to replace it, you know, because this was a licensed plumber, he had to inspect it. He had to notify us that, you know, something wasn't up to code, something to do with like a new type of fitting that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Because this is a new regulation that only came right. you know, came into effect within the last couple of years, and the water heater is 10 years old. The house is maybe 20 years old, and never had a problem with, like, you know, this water, whatever it is, never leaked, never exploded, never mm-hmm. nothing. But for some reason, the city said, oh, this is a thing you have to do now. So not only do we have right. to pay more because this guy has to pay for a license, but he's now telling us, well, in addition to the cost of replacing the water heater, you have to pay an extra $500 to put this in. And then you have to pay the city $300 to come and make sure right. that we put it in.
Right.
And so now almost an entire month's rent is spent on fixing the water heater. It's, right. It's so stupid. Whereas if I were still living in the house, we had another plumbing issue another time. And they gave us the same story, something totally unrelated. So this isn't the one that you can say, oh, well, that would have been fixed this time. This was some sort of valve or something outside of the house. And it was going to be like $600. But you know me, like if I'm living there, I don't care if I hire a guy who doesn't have a license as long as he knows what he's doing. He came and fixed it right. for like $100 with the right part. And we didn't pay the city to come out and inspect it, you know, but. We haven't had a problem with that, and that's been like 10 years. So
right.
it's you know, it's just a bunch of bullshit. And like, yeah, they're gonna say like, oh, well, if you don't put it in place, you know, your house is gonna explode. And it's like, really? So all these houses that aren't up to code because they haven't sold the house or rented it or anything, and they just haven't been inspected right. in 20 years that haven't exploded, that's just a fluke? I mean, if right. the risk is that big, shouldn't you be going door to door and making sure everybody has it?
Right, right. And it's nuts. And then not only that, like I understand the appeal to some of these regulations where people say, well, hey, you know, if I buy a house, like I don't know anything about home ownership and all these different things. Maybe it's a new home buyer, right? Maybe it's somebody who's like, you know, 24 years old. They happen to score a pretty good job, and now they want to buy a nice house and they found a good area, but they don't know a whole lot about homes. So they don't really know what to look for, you know, and I don't know everything to look for, you know?
Right.
So it's very reasonable, but I think we're in this kind
that
of
that can be a voluntary service,
correct? Like, and this kind of like segues into that.
I'll hire an inspector and he can know, like, maybe he doesn't have like laws, maybe he has like best practices, and he can go through the house and be like, oh, this isn't up to standard. And then you just go to the owner and say, yeah, you know what, there's some shitty wiring, the house might catch on fire, I'm going to negotiate the price down a little bit.
Absolutely. And we kind of have a service that already does something like that. It's not quite the same. We have Consumer Reports. And and there's actually plenty of websites that'll review all kinds of stuff. You know, if I want to buy a new laptop, I can go online and or a new phone, and they can say, all right, you know, I bought 10 phones and I'm going to review every single one of them, and I could watch the video on all of them, right? And I can get the lowdown from somebody who's an expert in technology. You know, but we have Consumer Reports that's basically been doing the same thing for many years. And you could simply have a private sector person who comes out, and all they do is they say, look, we're going to go out and we're going to inspect everything. And we're going to tell you right now, we're a little on the expensive side. You know, maybe we'll cost you $500, but we'll tell you what, our guarantee is that you're not going to have any surprises, you know, in six months, a year, so on and so forth. Right. Like we're going to do it right. And then somebody else might say, hey, you know, we're not as good as those guys, but here's a list of things that we check for, and here's the things that we don't check for. And somebody could look and say, okay, well, you know, this person wants to charge me $250, and they're only going to check for three quarters of the things that this other person is going to check for. So maybe I'm happy with that. Maybe it's somebody like me who isn't afraid to dig in and try to figure out, okay, what's going on? You know, let me try to fix it myself. And there's plenty of people out there who are way better at fixing their home and, you know, repairs than I am. Why should they be forced necessarily to have that service, which will increase the cost of a home that they might otherwise want to fix up anyway?
Right.
And so I think that's the message. You know, if we were talking about the echo chamber earlier, I think that's kind of the message that we need to really clearly put out there to people and say, like, this is how it might work. This is how your fears might be alleviated. You know, it's not a guarantee because we honestly can't predict the market. We don't know what's going to come up. But here's some ideas based on history, based on what we've learned so far.
Right. And I think there's so many, I mean, like, we keep digging on that. I mean, there's, you know, if you're renting, you have to get insurance. The insurance company can say, oh, well, you know, we're not going to cover XYZ. First of all, the bank is going to say, well, you have to get this kind of coverage if you want to get the loan. Because if the house burns down, they don't want to be left empty handed. So now you're forced by the bank, the people who are buying the house for you, to get this much coverage. And then when the insurance company comes in, they're going to say, okay, well, these are going to be the premiums. And because we're going to go through the house and inspect it, and because you don't have enough fire alarms, your premium is going to be much higher. And now you have the opportunity to say, oh, well, fire alarms aren't that expensive. I'll install a couple extra and I'll save $100 a month. And they can just give you a whole checklist of like, okay, so we checked all these things. Mm-hmm. Every checkbox costs you an extra $50 a month. You fix these, tell us to come back and you know, we'll lower your rate. There's so many different ways.
Oh, absolutely. And then in the long run, once these systems are in place, people learn about them and then they tell other people and they say, hey, if you go and you get this report from this particular company, and then you go to one of these banks, they really like that report and they're known to give you a better deal if you get a, you know, like those kind of things would happen, because those kind of things do happen. People start learning reputations and they start making financial decisions based on them, not only people, but big businesses as well. So, you know, if I own a company that inspects, and let's just say that I can brag about having 100,000 homes inspected, and, you know, over a 10-year period, none of those homes, you know, had any major failings, you know, that's going to make me look better. And then what ends up happening is when a bank sees my name, they're going to feel more confident that when we say this is a good house, or this is, you know, what this is, they're going to feel more confident in lending money to that, you know, because they've not come out to see the property. They don't know what it looks like. All they know is that they are lending money and they want to make sure that they get it back. Well, that's one way that they can guarantee that they're going to ensure that they get their money back is, one, if it doesn't burn down, you know, and the person stays renting to them, or not renting, but I mean, you know, paying their mortgage.
Right.
I guess it's kind of,
you know, this is an interesting thing too, that I saw in Mexico, and this is not something that would need to be enforced by law, or even necessarily something that everybody might have. But I bought a property down here with a mortgage. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I'll say this, the reason why more people own homes and the reason why homes are actually less expensive is because the loans they give you, the mortgages they give you are a fucking ripoff. The interest rates are high. You still got to put like a 50% down payment, which basically means, you know, if I make, if I can spend $1,000 a month on my mortgage, they're not giving me $200,000. They're giving me $50,000, which means the entire market is much lower, which means, well, hey, if I can save up half, I might as well save up more and just pay the whole thing in cash. And that's what people do here a lot. And as much as you hear about Mexico being a poor country, a lot of people just buy their homes cash. But there are some people who do the loans. And when you do the loans, I was required by the bank to get life insurance. So if I died, they wouldn't have to take the property and worry about selling it. Then the insurance company would pay them off and my next of kin would receive the house.
Wow.
And it's like, that's something you could totally do. You can buy life insurance in the United States, and you can say, you can, you know, probably write out a contract or put it in your will that my life insurance is going to pay off the balance of my mortgage. Like, it's super simple to do. In this case, the bank required it. But it's interesting that, like, I don't think many people really think about that. I don't know why, but I maybe it has to do with this mentality that we have of just like, oh yeah, we'll just pay it off and whatever happens. But like, we don't really think that far into the future. We don't really plan ahead. Right. We just kind of like, oh well, the bank's gonna approve me, so I guess, you know, they're smarter with money than I am. So if they think I'm good for it, I must be good for it.
Right. Yeah. No, that's wow. That's like a whole nother topic, you know, to talk about. I think there is a lot of financial illiteracy and just illiteracy in general, like how the world works, you know, and I think that I think we've become too dependent on somebody else having the answer. And I get it that you can't know everything, whether it's just because there's too much knowledge, which is, you know, applies to everyone, or, you know, some people just don't have either the time or the aptitude to know a lot of things. You know, there are plenty of things that that seem very, very mysterious to me, you know, and, you know, I don't know them, so I kind of rely on somebody else. But I don't really operate on this pretense that the world around me is unknown and I need to hear the answer from everybody else. And I think we kind of do that. And I think it's very much reinforced by government, because that's one of the first things that people say is like, well, you know, there needs to be a law, there needs to be a regulation. You know, what about if people this, what about if people that? And I'm like, yes, I get it. There is a problem there of, what did my friend call it? I had a friend one time, he referred to it as asymmetrical knowledge. There is this asymmetrical knowledge in many, many areas, but that doesn't mean that we can't adapt to it in ways that don't require government and in ways where we're not so ignorant about it, you know. And I can, you know, since we're talking about properties, I can give you a great example. The front of our house had some significant damage, and it at the end of the day, it looked like it was there was some, you know, old roofing, and the water came in and it trickled down, and there's this like huge wall at the very front, and it trickled down and just basically had its damage, had its way on the wood all the way down. And so it was all jacked up. And at the very bottom, we had some termite damage. And I, you know, I had to dig all that out, and I replaced it. I was taking out windows from the side of the, you know, from the side of the door. I mean, it was a huge amount of work, but some of the damage extended up toward the second floor. And it looked like there might be some damage to the foundation, I don't want to say foundation, but to the structure. And I wasn't sure. I didn't know. So we called up a friend that we knew who owns a construction business. And I said, hey man, can you come out and just take a look and give me your, you know, your professional opinion as a friend? And he said, sure. So he came out and he took a look at it. And he said, you know, based on what I'm seeing from where I can look at it, this is my assumption based on how I know they build houses, you know, in this area and whatnot. I said, okay. And he said, go online, you know, go to the city and get the blueprints, the original blueprints, and send them to me. He said, you can get an email copy and then you can send them to me. And he said, I'll take a look at them. And then I will, you know, confirm that what I think is going on with your structure is true, which then will give me confidence in what I'm saying about what I'm seeing here. I said, okay. So I went and I did that. You know what that cost me? Cost me a Starbucks gift card. You know, he came over. I didn't want to use his time just to use it. You know, I mean, he's a friend, but at the same time, this is his line of work. So I went and I got a Starbucks gift card and I gave it to him. And I said, hey man, you know, I appreciate you coming out. You know, and it cost me, I don't know, like $25 or something like that, you know, just to seal up this asymmetrical knowledge that I didn't have, that I wasn't going to be able to get in any meaningful amount of time. And then I was able to get my answer, which then meant I was able to go ahead and go forward and deal with the problem in the proper way. And I feel like that's the ticket that people are missing, is that when you start forming relationships, when we start realizing that we don't need government, we don't need an inspector necessarily come out. What we need is to have relationships, and we need to be able to go out and find good people that can come out and help us where we're deficient. And when we have that, when it's ubiquitous, very much like you're talking about with the Airbnb, it becomes cheaper. Because with Airbnb, like everybody was making lots of money, Airbnb rentals were kind of expensive at first, right? Like, you know, because you could charge a little bit more. But then as more and more people started using it, it got competitive. And competitive meant it got cheaper. And so then, you know, and I knew a lot of people that were doing Airbnb and they were like, yeah, you know, I used to make a lot of money, but now I'm not making as much. Well, that's because it got competitive. Same principle applies. It really does. And I think that's the message that we really need to get out there, is that these things will be filled. These areas, these gaps will be filled, and not necessarily in a way that's only available to the elite. Because I can assure you, I'm not elite. You know, I mean, I'm doing well enough, but I'm no, I was going to say Donald Trump, but that's not, I'm no whoever's actually rich that we know they're rich, right? Like, I'm not that person. So, but you know, and I don't have anything special about me. I don't have a huge network. You know, I just know some people, and I just called up some friends and said, hey, come over. Here's a gift card. I think anybody can do that. I think that's a message that we need to really be working on.
Yeah. And, you know, something you said earlier about, you know, about how things are difficult. I mean, I know you were kind of talking about that now with the asymmetrical knowledge, but I was just thinking, like, there are so many systems that we have today that are extremely difficult, and we don't really think about it because we've already learned those systems so well. And a lot of that doesn't come, and like, I'll give an example. Traffic court ain't easy. That's a shitty system that we all have to figure out, but we all know that system so well. And how many things do we know about that system? Because you go to that system, they don't teach you what the traffic court system is, right? They don't teach you anything. They just try to herd you through and get your money. But how much do we know about that system? Because we talk to each other and say, oh man, I got a traffic ticket. Hey man, let me tell you what you're going to do. You go down there, you know, if you request that they move it to another court, then the cop's probably not going to show up. If you, if you request a, you know, request a date change, you do this, you do that, like the cop might, and like all these things come out. But like the first time you get a ticket, if you don't talk to anybody and you don't ask any questions and you just go through their system, they're just going to ram you right through the system and take everything you got.
Right.
And I think yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, and when we get bad information, we're not as mad about it as we might like to think. You know, one of the arguments is that, you know, government needs to be there because they're going to make sure to give us the right answers, the good answers, right? and you can't trust the market. But the market is really nothing more than people. That's all it is. And so when I talk to, you know, an uncle or a brother or a, you know, a friend down the road, the only difference between him and I, or you know, any of them and I in the market would be that I'm not paying them. That would be the only difference, right? But the information may, you know, may be the same. It may be good information, it may be bad information. So for instance, when I was a young lad and I got out of high school, I joined the National Guard or the military, and I joined, I had to get a secret clearance. It's not really that big, but it sounded big at the time, you know, because I was 18. I didn't know any better. I was like, oh, wow, a secret clearance. You know, this is awesome. And I did the number one rule that no 18-year-old realizes until many years later. I listened to the recruiter. Okay. The recruiter told me something. I totally believed him. And I went away. I went about my way believing him. And one of the things that he told me, he said, if you get a speeding ticket, just tell the officer that, you know, you know, just casually mention that you've got a secret clearance and you want to be careful that you don't mess it up. And I was like, oh, wow. And he's like, yeah, you'll totally get out of a ticket. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. So sure enough, I get pulled over. I'm in the back of the squad car and the officer, no, I'm sorry. I'm not in the back. I'm in the passenger seat. And this officer's writing the ticket. And I was trying to think, all right, how do I say this? You know, like, how do I bring this about? And so I just kind of, like, I casually mentioned it. I was like, man, I was like, this was dumb for me to do this. I hope this doesn't ruin my secret clearance with the military. He laughed at me. He laughed and he said, what kind of secrets do you know? And then gave me, right? Now, I was a little bit salty over that.
Well, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
right. I was salty over that, right? But I wasn't like super angry in the way that people think when they say, oh, if we leave it up to the free market, all hell is going to break loose. It's going to be pandemonium. No, I just chalked it up as simple bad advice. And, you know, as you go along, I've had bad advice. I've had good advice. And you learn kind of how to identify the difference between the two. You kind of learn, okay, this person, I probably should double check what they're saying. And then other people, you're like, I feel pretty confident about this person right here. You know, and this is without even any money involved. You start adding money, and now you might have liability issues. You know, if it were the libertarian world that I'm thinking of, you know, which would say, like, if I pay you money, I may, you know, depending on the situation, I may or may not be liable for the outcome of whatever it is that you paid me money for. You know, if it was clear that I led you, you know, like if I gave you legal advice and you found out later that I had never been to a law school and I fraudulently told you that I had been to law school, well, then, yeah, there may be some monetary repercussions for me, you know. And so I think those are the things that people don't think about when we're talking about the free market, replacing government and being able to do the things that that we need. But then the other side of that, or I don't want to say the other side, but the other element of that is the ability to choose what we want to get. Like we were talking about earlier with, say, maybe inspections. Maybe I'm a really handy person around the house. I don't need, you know, someone to go and have all these things inspected, because I'll figure it out on my own and I'll deal with it. And I'm very happy and content to do that. So maybe I want to pay a little bit less on the inspection. And, you know, maybe I've got enough money. I can buy the home straight out. I don't know, whatever the case may be, the option's not there. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that's arguably one of the biggest problems that I think is always turns up. And I think a lot of libertarians need to kind of step back and remember that, because even like I've seen a lot of libertarians, you know, even, you know, they're running for an office and they've got some crazy plan that they've cooked up. And this is the way it's going to be. And everyone's going to go by this and it'll be great. And it's like, hey, that might be a great idea, but the whole point of this is that everybody should have the choice. And you know, you look at so many people outside of the libertarian circle, people who are on the left, people who are on the right, people who are just like, I don't want anything to do with this mess. And anything that they say, and I'm talking like down to the Medicare for all people, down to the build the wall people.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to all this stuff, if you talk to these people and you find out what the real problem is that's driving them to want these things to happen, ultimately there's something that we can say, hey, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but should you force other people to participate in that if they really just don't want to? Just right. Like how you're now being forced to participate in this opposite system, which you don't want to participate in. Shouldn't we just say everybody has the right to do whatever they want? And I mean, not to do whatever they want. That's how libertarianism gets misinterpreted. I shouldn't have said it
sure,
like that.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
But to choose whichever options make you happy, whatever works out best for you.
Right.
And it's you know, I see there was a woman I tried to reach out to. She's running for Congress. I want to say down there in Florida, but maybe it's somewhere else. And she posts a lot of really amazing stuff, like, you know, pardon Assange and everything else. But she's also Medicare for all. And mm-hmm. I want to have a conversation with her because, like, I get it. Hell, like, her issue is not that we don't have Medicare, right? She's not like, everybody should have Medicare because having Medicare is just like, yeah, we need the card. No, it's not about the card, right? It's about being able to afford healthcare, which is a problem everybody agrees with. Healthcare is too expensive. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat or anybody else. It's too expensive. And so what if we can have that conversation and say, well, what if I could propose a different option, right? What if I don't want to participate in Medicare, but I want to participate in something else? And let me tell you what the something else is. And let me tell you why I can't have that right now. It's not because somebody else has to pay for it. It's because the government is prohibiting me from doing that.
Right.
Then can we at least can you? Okay, fine. You want to subscribe to Medicare? I'll allow that for now. But I want to participate in this other program that has nothing to do with Medicare. Can I? And I think if we can open that option up, then because this is the thing, right? People say Medicare is the only viable option because the opposite is to not have Medicare, and that's what we have now. And there's no conversation around, well, maybe the high prices could actually just be fixed because like if you add Medicare on top of it, this other problem of the high expense does not go away. It's still there. You're just hiding it.
Right.
And I think we have to start digging. But I'm totally going on a tangent from my original point of, but we should have that option. We should be able to choose. Nobody should be forced to be on Social Security if they don't want it. Nobody should be forced to pay into Social Security if they say, I never want to take out of Social Security. Nobody should be forced to participate in Medicare if they say, I never want to participate in Medicare. I mean, I know plenty of people who are like, I don't even have health insurance. And if I die, I die. Big deal. I'm going to live my life to whatever makes me happy. And that's the end of it. And people are happy like that. And I get it. Like, we're always looking at other people's lives. Like, how can somebody live like that?
Mm-hmm.
But just because we don't have an answer to that doesn't mean that person should not be able to live like that.
Right.
It just means like we have a different set of opinions and we should not force somebody else. I mean, if somebody wants to live without insurance, let them.
Right. And so one of the things that I tell, you know, my wife is not a libertarian. And one of the things that I really hammer in on is the ability or the issue of being informed. And so I'm always thinking about like, how can I make sure that this person is, you know, properly informed about, you know, whatever it is that, whatever transaction that's about to occur between us. And a really good example is actually this whole COVID thing. I have a friend who takes it very, very serious. And I don't dismiss the idea of COVID. I think there's something there. But I'm not so confident at all about the response that we've, that our society has implemented over the last almost year now. I'm not at all impressed by it. And I think the response has in some ways made it worse. But ultimately, when my friend comes over, I'll let them know. I'll say, hey, look, you know, I've been to this event, if I've been to an event recently. And I just let them know. You know, and I think that's the thing that's just, you know, one, if there was one thing that libertarians, I think, could do to really just chip away is impress upon people the idea of making sure that people are fully informed so that they can make the best decision possible for them. And we don't do that at all, you know. And I'm trying to think of, you know, the first idea that comes to mind is not one that I think I can share. So I'm trying to think of another one. But, you know, there are times when it's really important that we be well informed. And I think we're not. And I don't think that people look at it and say, I don't have all the information. That in itself is a problem. I think people look at it and they say, you know, kind of going back to where we were talking about, like, the experts who we tend to think are maybe government employees, not we as in you and I, but just we as in society in general. And, you know, people will say, okay, well, if this inspector comes out and they've looked at my home, it's probably good. A lot of people think that way, you know, because they're from the government, and the government has all these rules and processes in place. And, you know, clearly those are going to work for me. And so I think that people just haven't really learned to really think in terms of being well informed. And I think a lot could be accomplished once people really start grasping that and saying, you know what, I need to be well informed. Hey, I want to come over to your house, man. Have you been anywhere in the last 2 weeks? I know it's a bit crazy to you, but it's important to me. Okay, great. Awesome. You haven't been anywhere. I'm willing to come over. Or, hey, it was a week ago. How about we reschedule till next week? Those kind of things should be commonplace, and it should be like second nature. Like, we don't even think about it, but they're not.
Right. And
sorry, I went on a tangent too.
No. I mean, you know, you talk about being informed, and I think, you know, for one, the media is always making sure that we're not informed by giving us wrong information, or by suppressing the correct information,
right,
or even suppressing opposing information, right? I mean,
correct. Yeah.
For a lot of things that, you know, going on with COVID, nothing is concrete on either side. We have two sides. We have scientists,
right,
credible scientists on both sides,
oh, yeah,
debating,
oh,
how,
yeah,
terrible this thing actually is. And they're suppressing one side of the conversation. So we don't have the information. But I think what's amazing, and I've seen this with myself and I've seen this with other people, is you know, you know, they say knowledge is power, and we kind of laugh that off when you know, we hear that in high school. Yeah, knowledge, mm-hmm, is power, mm-hmm, ha, 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 whatever. I know,
right,
where,
right,
I'm going to be working. But it really is. And I've seen this myself, like, where I'm like, oh man, I could never figure out how to do that. And then, mm-hmm, I actually go and learn how to do something, and I'm like, oh, this is easy. I just needed the correct information. I just needed to know,
right,
how something works. And all of a, yep, sudden it's like, oh wow, I have godlike powers. I know how to do something amazing. But
oh,
then,
yeah,
there's also like, and okay, I'm a smart person, right? I'd say I'm above average IQ, but I like, and so a lot of people would say, oh yeah, but not everyone's as smart as you. Okay, well, that's no excuse, because I've seen some really stupid people do some really amazing things with just a little bit of knowledge. And,
right,
and I mean, you know, I don't want to call out any names here, but there are billionaires who have made all their money in real estate, and they're not the smartest people. They just,
right,
learned how to do something, and they,
yeah,
learned a few things about it, and they learned how to get really good at it. And
there absolutely
are...
there's a book. Yeah,
yeah.
There's, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. There's a book. I think it's the Millionaire Mind. I think that's the book. My wife was reading it and she was telling me about it. And there's a particular passage in there where you know, the guy is talking about his education level, and he is that the book?
Okay. No, this is actually like, well, sorry, finish your story and then I'll show you.
So I think it's The Millionaire Mind. And in that book, this guy's talking and he said, I don't have a PhD, but I have a lot of PhDs that work for me, you know?
Right.
And I've heard from a number of, you know, I don't want to say heard, I've read from a number of different sources that a lot of very wealthy people are not extremely educated as you might think. Like, they're not like rolling with two or three PhDs. And that oftentimes a lot of the people that work for them are actually smarter than them in particular areas, or maybe in, you know, overall, but they've just focused their intellect in a particular on a particular path, you know, whereas the person who's a little bit less intellectual has focused their intellect, you know, whatever they have available to them, on a different path. And, you know, there was a there's another libertarian, and I don't, you know, I'll mention his name because this is nothing nefarious or negative, but his name is, and I'm going to totally screw it up, I'm just sure of it, Thomas Quitter? Is it Quitter?
Yeah, Quitter.
Quitter. Okay, I hope I said that right. If you're listening, I do apologize. Go ahead and flame me if you need to. But he had posted something a while back, I saw, that there was a, I think it was a woman, it might have been a man, but there was a woman who had Down syndrome that was running for a running for an office somewhere. I think it was running for office. And it was like, the whole question was like, and why not? You know, and I think that's the attitude that I look at it. It doesn't matter what intellect you have or we think you don't have. If you want something, go get it. Or in my case, like I was talking about earlier, when I had all that damage on my property, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. I could have learned about it, but the time that it would have taken me to learn about it would have been way more costly. So it was much easier for me to seek out somebody that I could trust to get that information from. So there's always going to be some level of information asymmetry, right? Some, you know, maybe even you might even call it intellectual asymmetry, but let's just go with information asymmetry. There's always that present, but that doesn't mean that somebody can't work around it on their own and make do, or, you know, do what they need, or find somebody to compensate in the areas that they lack. So there's always those availabilities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you brought that one up. So, when I was like maybe 20 something, I was introduced to the Millionaire Mind. There was like a seminar, and like, I was like, I don't want to go to seminars. What the hell is this all about? And, my mom was actually, working with the organization, and she gave me a copy of that book, The Millionaire Mind. And I was like, what the hell is this? And like, I kind of read it. And then I was like, hey, this is actually really interesting. And like, that kind of like turned me, like, after that, I was a seminar junkie for like a couple of years, going to like everything. But so I just happened to have this, my mom, left this to me when she passed, but it's Millionaire Mind, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. And it's like this little box, and it's got all these cards in it. And like, and I'm not getting paid to sponsor this, but I think this is like really, like, this is something that really was kind of eye-opening to me as kind of a burnout, a burnout young 20s kind of guy, just kind of like, you know, doing whatever, partying. But this book has like lots of really, really important information about, and it's not just like to be a millionaire, it's to be successful in whatever you want to do. And it breaks it down into so many different little like tidbits. And so this is like basically just like this like card deck of like, each card has a thing on it. So like, this one is embrace responsibility, which is kind of a libertarian thing. And it's got like a little description on the back, like the lesson about it. And I was trying to find a couple related to what we were talking about, becoming a great learner. Rich people constantly learn to grow. Poor people think that they already know everything. Every master was once a disaster. You can learn to be great at anything. And I think this was definitely one of those books where, you know, they really did emphasize, you don't have to be a genius to become wealthy or to become successful. You have to have that desire. You have to have that passion to do what you believe in. And there's a lot of, persistency. I mean, half of this thing is talking about, like, you know, show up on time, because, you know, like, that's everywhere. Like, you know, 90% of success is showing up. Expand your comfort zone, do things you're not entirely here, stretch your comfort zone. And it's like, these things are, I think, not just important for personal finances, not just important for personal freedom, they're important just for you to enjoy your life, because these are like, these are lessons that they don't teach you in school that I think mm-hmm. are extremely important for everybody. Because like, if we just go based on what we learn in school, which by the way, our government schools and funded by lobbyists, the curriculum is like decided by lobbyists. If that's all we lived our lives by, we're slaves to the government.
Right.
And it's bullshit, because there's so much more to life than that. There's so much, I mean, there's so many great things out there. And if we think our life has to be, no, we go to work 40 hours a week. We don't take any vacations. We don't do anything exceptional or extraordinary because we're not that kind of person. Then what the fuck are we living for?
I think the big libertarian message is that your life can be more full with maybe not the full on libertarian attitude, but if people who aren't libertarians start looking at the libertarian attitude and saying, okay, I want to embrace some of that. I think by embracing some of that, they will see that their lives are fuller. Because one of the core things, and I don't mean philosophically, I just mean as far as like how it ends up playing out, one of the core things is a bit of self-sufficiency, you know? And that doesn't mean that you have to learn everything and know everything and be super smart. It just means that you have to be willing to seek out as much information as you possibly can and learn as much as you can and never stop. You know, my wife is, she's much more educated than I am. She's got two master's degrees, one in engineering, one in business, very, very smart. And when she goes out to a property and she's working with contractors, if she doesn't know something, she's like standing over them. And she's like, so what are you doing there? Why is that? And it's not that she's being a pain. And her personality is such that it's very clear that she's not just being a pain. She's very inquisitive, right? Like, she really wants to know. She's like, I'm just curious. I want to know what's going on here. Why are you doing that? Why would it, you know, why are you putting that thing in front of that other thing instead of the other way around, whatever the case may be, you know? And so she has this, this mentality of just continually learning. And I think that's what makes people successful, and not successful just in the monetary sense, you know, successful in the, I have feel like I've lived a, you know, a fulfilled life, you know, because maybe going again, back to the argument that we made, or that I was making earlier, about somebody who might want to buy a home that they intend on repairing. And so they don't need to have this inspection, and they don't need to have all these regulations that have required certain things. They're going to go and do it themselves because they simply enjoy it. It might be their hobby, you know, just like I'm starting to enjoy woodworking as of late. I'm making all kind of mistakes, and it's okay. But the same thing would apply, you know, like, woodworking doesn't come with regulation per se, but what if my hobby was fixing up my home and, you know, running new lights, you know, in places, and, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, taking down a wall and putting up a new wall somewhere else, you know, and feeling the pride of that accomplishment. That kind of success, which isn't necessarily monetary, is, I think, something that you can get with a more libertarian attitude. And I think these are the kind of things that we want to impress upon people, is that it's not just about stay off my lawn and don't take my money. Like, there's really a lot more to it, even if we don't necessarily talk about it. Unfortunately, politics kind of drives everything to talk about, you know, legislation and policies and stuff like that. But I think there's actually more to it. And I think there's a more fulfilled life there when you have that attitude.
Right. And, you know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, you know, a lot about this, where, I mean, okay, so, you know, we started off the show talking about, you know, asking the government permission for everything. Like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, I want to create this new business, but is it legal? And
right.
I think, like, that mentality is, like, it's a mentality of living in a system where you have to ask permission for everything. And as kids, that's kind of how our parents kind of raise us, you know, to think too. So maybe it comes partially from our parents and not from our government, but definitely a lot from our government. But but what's interesting about this is I've talked to so many people who, you know, I kind of like got into this attitude where I was like, you know, this think and grow rich, like trying to learn how to grow my income, because I wanted to have a life where I had lots of things and lots of money to spend. And of course I had, when I was younger, I had dumber reasons for wanting more money. But the right. point is, like, I wanted to learn how to grow like that. And so I took it upon myself to stop asking for permission for everything and to go out and right. get what I want. And that doesn't right. mean go out and steal it, but it means to go out and, you know, stop feeling like you have to ask for permission for everything. And in doing so, like, now when I have conversations with people, and even, you know, when I first started learning this, and I would have conversations with, you know, just my friends who were kind of at the same stage as me, just, you know, young, early 20s, trying to, you know, figure out what we're going to do with our lives. It was, you know, a friend would say, like, oh man, I'm not getting paid enough at this job. And I would say things like, well, why don't you go get a raise? And they're like, no, I couldn't ask for a raise. Why don't you, hey man, let's take a trip. Why don't you take some time off of work? No, I don't want to ask for any time off of work. Like this like mentality of, I have to ask for permission for time off.
Right.
But once I kind of came to this understanding, I took the approach of, hey, I'm going to take some time off next month. So like, I'm not asking them for permission. I'm telling them what right. I'm going to do, because ultimately, right. if they say, hey, you can't take any time off, I'm going to be like, well, okay, but I'm not going to show up to work. You're going to be right. disappointed if you don't plan around this. And too many people get into this, like, oh no, I got to be thankful that I have this job and I don't want them to fire me or replace me. And I get it. Some, you know, some jobs are worse than others with that. Like, oh, you want sure. vacation time, you're fired. But not all of them. Most of them are not like that.
Right.
But people are still absolutely afraid. And I think that's an important carryover, like you were saying, a carryover of libertarianism into the real world, the real life, where if we stop right. living asking for permission from everybody else, then we can start taking charge of our own life. And we still right. want to live by the rules of don't harm other people, don't hurt their stuff, don't take their stuff. But we still, like, we just, like, hey, I can do whatever I want in this world. I can do whatever I want right. in this life, as long as I don't interfere with somebody else's. And so many things just become available to us,
right.
the way that we interact with other people. I want to, we're at the end of the show, and I want to give you an opportunity mm-hmm. to plug your podcast, plug anything you're working on. But I first want to say this: Bitcoin is now $40,946.13 per Bitcoin. Holy nice. Shit.
Nice.
Floor is yours. What are you working on? Where can people find out more about you?
So, you know, I'm you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, I have this podcast. It's called Liberty Dad. All one word, not two words. So if you look for it on your favorite podcasting network, you're going to look up for a one word. And the idea behind podcast, I'll try to be as brief as I can, is that liberty represents the message and dad represents the delivery. And I kind of got myself into this mentality where I said, there's got to be a better way to reach out and talk to people. There's got to be a way that's more convincing, you know? And so I really dove into this. I mean, I joined Toastmasters. I mean, I've worked really, really hard to try to figure out, you know, how is it that when I'm talking to somebody who's not a libertarian, I can at least, you know, and my goal, this is my goal when I talk to people, is to at least get them to say, that's an interesting thought. That's it. Because I know I'm not going to convince you right away, but if I can at least give you something to walk away with to think about, I feel like I've been very successful in that conversation. And so to do that, I've been doing it for a long time now, just on a personal basis with all my friends, with virtually every Airbnb guest that we had at our house. You know, I had plenty of conversations with people all over the spectrum, amazing conversations, just fabulous conversations, right? And so I started this podcast, Liberty Dad, and you can find it at libertydad.com. Right now, it's only audio. And last year, I was kind of stumbling around, trying to find my way, trying to figure out the processes and all that. This year, I'm stepping it up a little bit. I'm going to be adding video to it now. I've been working really hard. I'm hoping to get my first video out Monday. It's looking very promising. And I'm going to be doing something, I think it's a little bit unique in the podcast circles. I'm not entirely certain because I haven't seen everything, because I don't go out and look at a lot of the, you know, what everybody else is doing. But I'm hoping it's going to be a little bit more entertaining. And if not, well, you know, the market will let me know. So if you want to find me, libertydad.com. It's very family friendly. I don't use any profanity. I may talk about some serious topics. I'll let you know if you've got little ones. But otherwise, the idea behind it is, you know, I want to present, this is how I think we should talk to people. And this is the way that I think that we should present various ideas to the greater public so that we can be more influential. And that's what I got, man.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I feel terrible now for swearing on the show.
Oh no, not at all. No. It's only, so look, here's the thing. I wanted to, and I think this is very important for people to know. And I tell this on my podcast. I mean, I've been sitting here drinking brandy as we've been talking, and it's not that I don't use profanity. I have a certain area where I feel like this particular level of professionalism is what I personally want to exude. And so that's right. What I do. I'm not at all offended by other people. And, you know, there are certain times and places for it. And if that works for your show, that's great. For me, it's just a particular thing that I wanted for my show. You know, so I don't.
Are you saying people should be able to decide for themselves?
I mean,
what kind of
chaos
is that?
You know, I know, right? Like, and you know, just decide, like, hey, what do I think the market is? You know, what do I think is good for the market? You know, what do I think that might work? And this is what I think that might work for what I'm trying to do. So that's what I do.
Awesome.
But if you come to my house and we have some drinks, all bets are off.
All right. That sounds great. And that I mean, you also gave me a good idea too, talking libertarianism to all your Airbnb renters. I'm like, man, I need to like deck the house out in like all these like secret libertarian messages and like the paintings on the wall and everything. So like they're all being like brainwashed while they're there.
We got none of that. Well, if they're not in your same house, then yeah, maybe. But like in our house where we were doing it in our personal home, the conversations just came up, and because of the way that I talk, it just it gets there. And you know, and I've had some really fabulous conversations with people. It's pretty amazing.
Awesome. So. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been an awesome conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, for sure.
Absolutely. And if you're listening to the show and you liked what you heard, please remember to subscribe and share it. Share it with all your friends. Post it, like, comment, do all that kind of stuff. We're up against the algorithms here and they don't like us. And also make sure you head over to youtube.com/taxationistheft and subscribe over there. We're almost at 3,000. And of course, once we hit 3,000, we're going to keep on growing, until it's big enough for them to hate us and take it down, because that's just the way they do things. Until next time, taxation is theft.